watch your babies grow up to be cowboys. Don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks. Make them be doctors and lawyers and such. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. They'll never stay home and they're always alone. Even with someone they love. Cowboys ain't easy to love and they're harder to hold. And they'd rather give you a song.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, nearly 300 members of the American Federation of Government Employees Union marched outside the headquarters of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. They were protesting recent rulings by the authority's Federal Service Impasse Panel, a group that arbitrates union grievances. AFGE's president, John Gage, called the seven-member panel anti-union, anti-employee, and anti-collective bargaining. Gage also accused the group of imposing radical right-wing philosophies in the federal workplace. The protest was also a call for President Bush, who appointed the original seven members, to appoint a fair and independent board.
For the first time since 1999, more than 150 unions in Peru participated in a 24-hour general strike on Wednesday. They were striking against Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo. Elected with a majority of popular support, Toledo's approval rating has dipped to only 7%. More than 90,000 police officers were called out to use tear gas on the thousands of protesters blocking the streets with burning tires and debris. Demonstrators say they're angry with Toledo's free market policies and with Peru's rampant poverty. Over half of the country's population lives on less than $1.25 a day.
One of the biggest accounting firms in the country is being sued under claims that a HIV-positive man was discriminated against by management. James Keith Lackey, who was employed at the Dallas branch of KPMG, said that after he had to reveal to his supervisor, Paula Rogers, that he was battling HIV, she ordered him to wear gloves at his workstation. Another supervisor in the same department said that Rogers told others at the firm that Lackey had the virus, a violation of the Texas Health and Safety Code. According to Lackey, the complaints he made to Human Resources fell on deaf ears, and at one point he was told he should just wear the gloves to make Rogers happy. Soon he found himself transferred to the mailroom. He was terminated from KPMG in March of this year.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to approve the implementation of the U.S.-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Ranchers stand to lose significantly as tariffs on sheep and livestock are phased out. The agreement also blocks the importation of less expensive prescription drugs from Australia. The Senate is expected to vote on the agreement by August. It will likely pass and be signed by President Bush.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS has reduced the workforce in some African countries by 20%. A recent report issued by the International Labor Organization estimates that 6,000 youths are infected daily. The report goes on to say that as the trend continues, it could have a devastating effect on labor in high-prevalence African countries, and also result in lower productivity and pose a great challenge to future economic growth.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
George W., bless his little heart, loves national parks. At least he tells us he does in various campaign ads and carefully staged photo ops that picture him in khaki and plaid walking around our parks. In fact, we now learn that George so loves national parks that he can't stand to hear any bad things said about them. So the Bushites have issued new upbeat talking points, instructing all park personnel not only to speak positively about park conditions, but also to praise George himself for being so good for our parks. They find it necessary to try dictating what's said about the parks because, well, the parks are deteriorating. Badly. This is especially embarrassing to George because he had campaigned in 2000 on a solemn pledge to eliminate the $4 billion backlog in needed repairs to fix unsafe trails, clogged toilets, closed facilities, etc. But he didn't keep his promise. In fact, he has cut park budgets. The repair backlog now stands at $5 billion and growing. To try covering up the obvious, the Bushites issued an internal memo to park superintendents, instructing them not to use the term budget cuts when telling visitors why things are such a mess, but instead to say service level adjustments. Also, they were told to implement their budget cuts in areas that won't cause public or political controversy. And if visitors ask about the bad conditions, superintendents were told to say, "This administration is very committed to preserving the resources of the national parks." What happens if a park official balks at the new Bush speak? Asked Teresa Chambers, head of the U.S. Park Police. When she told reporters that she didn't have the funds to do an adequate job, she was forced to go on administrative leave and ordered not to talk to reporters. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight Bush's politicalization of our parks, call the National Parks Conservation Association, 1-800-628-7275.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, greetings, friends. Happy Friday. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever it may be for you. End of the week. I realize some of you, it's the beginning of the week. It's the middle of... In any case, it's the beginning of the weekend here. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations all across America, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the world on radiopower.org, and on cable radio network, CRN. As well as archives at whiterosesociety.org. And you can find all the links at tomhartman.com. You can also get to our chat room there. And if you would like to call our program today, it's Brunch with Bernie, our Brunch with Bernie program. Our number is area code 866-889-8894. That's one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. And it's time for Brunch with Bernie. In 1991, Congressman Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the House of Representatives. He's since been reelected 5 times. He's the longest-serving independent in the history, the 228-year history of the House of Representatives, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Hey, welcome, Bernie.
Tom, good to be with you.
It is great to have you. Boy, lots of fireworks in the House of Representatives this week and in the Senate as well. I'm not sure what's on the top of your list here. I wanted to talk to you about what happened with Corinne Brown and the Australia Free Trade Agreement. Interesting
right.
stuff.
And we passed a very good amendment last night, which would stop the Export-Import Bank from providing loan guarantees and loans to companies who become expatriate, who move to Bermuda, the Cayman Islands, companies who leave the United States for the express goal of avoiding paying taxes and then come to the Congress and say, can we have some corporate welfare? Obviously, we're too good to pay taxes, but we would love to have some support from the rest of the jerks in America who have to pay their taxes.
Yeah.
And with a very strong vote, we were able to win that amendment. We'll see what we can do in the Senate and get it passed.
That's great. You must have had some Republicans signing onto that.
We did. We had a lot of Republicans. The truth is, we had virtually every Democrat, and I think we had some 80 Republicans.
Wow.
And it's just very hard for a member of Congress in this time in our history to go back to their constituents and say, oh, yeah, no problem. These companies can move to Bermuda to avoid paying taxes, but I'm going to support them getting corporate welfare from you. Very hard position to defend, and a lot of folks chose not to defend it. We won it big time.
Yeah, but just a year and a half ago, that same battle was being fought. It was around, I believe it was Defense Appropriation Bill, wasn't it, for Iraq?
It's come up in different contexts. This one dealt with the Export-Import Bank, which is a little-known institution.
Uh-huh.
Which provides huge amounts of loans, subsidies, loan guarantees to corporations, many of whom, by the way, are throwing American workers out onto the street. It's really one of the more egregious examples of corporate welfare and giving money to corporations who are doing very little for the American people.
Yeah,
they're taking the money, they're running abroad to avoid paying taxes, they're taking the money, and then they're taking our jobs to China. These are not the kinds of companies that we should be supporting.
Now, I mean, you know, Halliburton did this with a number of their subsidiaries. Is there any kind of this only has to do with the corporations that are getting money from the Export-Import Bank.
This particular one, because of the nature of the bill, it was the Foreign Appropriations Bill. The only thing we could address in that bill was the Export-Import Bank.
Yeah, but it's a great
foot in the door. But it's the concept, obviously, that you go beyond the Export-Import Bank.
Yeah, it's a great foot in the door. It's a start. It's a start.
Yeah.
That's marvelous. I've got an audience. And by the way, let me let our listeners know, if you have a question or comment or whatever for Congressman Sanders, this is your hour of the week, 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, I've got a clip here. It's 23 seconds. Of Congresswoman Corinne, or is it Corrine?
Corrine.
Corrine Brown. Let me just play this, and then you can tell us what the story is behind this, if that's
sure.
Well, actually, it's going to take just a second for me to plug the thing in. Why don't you set it up, and then I'll play it.
Well, interestingly enough, I was at a meeting with Corrine earlier in the morning where we heard from Greg Palast. You know who Greg Palast is, Tom?
Oh, yeah. He's a friend.
And he wrote a very good book called The Best Democracy That Money Could Buy. And he was there speaking to a group of us, talking about not only what happened in Florida in the year 2000, but the fact that all over America, African Americans are not getting their votes counted for a wide variety of reasons, not necessarily a conspiracy, but just for many, many reasons, the proportion of blacks who are not getting their votes counted is much higher than whites. So it was interesting that later on in the day, that particular incident took place in the House.
Yeah, and here's the clip. This is Corrine Brown and
Florida.
From Florida, where you and others participated in what I call the United States coup d'etat. We need to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Over and over again, after the election, when you stole the election, you came back here and said, get over it. No, we're not going to get over it. And we want verification from the world.
Now, Bernie, this does not appear in the congressional record.
That's a good question. I think that is probably right. If the vote is to take her words down, I think it is expunged. I'm not 100% sure about that, Tom.
So it's like the Republicans not only voted. She was saying she wants UN election monitors, at least in Florida and ideally around the country, for the 2004 election. And not only did Republicans say no, you can't have that, but they proposed legislation saying it's illegal for election monitors to come in.
Well, they wanted to bring this issue up because they thought it would work in their favor. That's right.
Yeah.
But Corrine is actually a very interesting woman from Florida, a good friend of mine, who speaks her mind, as you could hear.
Boy.
She is not going. They say forget about what happened. Get past it. She never will get past it. She represents a heavily African-American community, and she knows what happened in Florida. She will never forget it. She's going to fight as hard as she can to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
Right. And then the Republican leadership of the House, at least is my understanding, said that she was out of order, or what she said was unacceptable.
Well, what
to them
they call is there are rules in the House. In other words, you can't make certain types of personal insults. And if you do, what they do is they take your words down and you slapped on the wrist and so forth and so on. So that was what that was about.
So they just deleted it. It's as if it never happened.
Okay. We got a couple of calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. 14 minutes past the hour. Jim in Baton Rouge, Louisiana is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Good morning, Tom.
Oh, it's Jim, our truck driver friend.
Yes. There's two things that I see that are going hand in hand that disturb me a little bit. Tommy Franks gave an interview with Cigar Aficionado about this suspension of the Constitution if we get attacked. Also, the day they caught Saddam, Bush signed the Patriot Act 2, which allows the suspension of posse comitatus and the possibility of the suspension of the Constitution. Can Mr. Sanders talk about that? Maybe I'm wrong
sure.
on that.
Yeah, okay. Let me say a word about that, Jim. Okay. There has been some speculation, and I think you're right about what Tommy Frank said, but more recently within the White House, there has been some murmuring, well, what happens if a day before, 2 days before Election Day, there is a Patriot attack? What might be the mechanism by which the election could be postponed? Well, needless to say, a lot of us were not happy about that discussion. The Constitution is very clear about when we have elections, and we will have elections. So there is discussion in Congress to make certain that we will have elections on Election Day. In terms of the USA Patriot Act 2, there is no USA Patriot Act 2. That was a document that was leaked, which suggests the degree to which Ashcroft and his friends would like to go further. I have very, very strong concerns and been fighting against Patriot Act 1. But Patriot Act 2 has not been, there is no legislation out there that has been passed called Patriot Act 2. The concern is that different provisions may be tucked in here, there, and someplace else. But there is no USA Patriot Act 2 that has been passed or even, to the best of my knowledge, proposed.
Well, dealing with Bernie, the two specifics that Jim mentioned, the suspension or elimination of posse comitatus, which is a provision of law that says that the U.S. Army cannot be used against United States citizens on United States soil, and also the giving the president the power to. Well, he said overthrow the Constitution. I'm not sure specifically what that would mean, but I've heard that there have been various little sneaky things done, and I don't know to what extent this is real.
The idea of using the military to keep illegal immigrants out and so forth and so on, expanding the use of the U.S. military within the confines of the United States is something that has been talked more and more about. I mean, the bottom line here of this whole discussion, Tom, is that we have the most reactionary attorney general, I think, certainly in the modern history of America, a guy who does not have a lot of respect for the U.S. Constitution or the individual rights and liberties of the American people. And I think that we have got to be very, very vigilant in making sure that these guys just, in one way after another way after another way, do not abridge the constitutional rights that we have fought so hard to maintain and to keep us as a free country.
Amen. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Hello, gentlemen. Since the Senate intelligence report, the right-wing line is something like, none of the rationalizations for invading Iraq were true, but it was all the fault of the CIA. Bush was given bad intelligence, and it wasn't his fault, which is okay, except it's crap. We all remember the 16 words in the State of the Union address about, fictitious uranium from Niger going to Iraq. The CIA had vetted that speech, and the CIA had told the White House, this is according to the Washington Post, the New York and L.A. Times, and probably other people, the CIA had told the White House, you can't use the claim because it's not true. And the Bush administration said, the British haven't said this is crap yet. I mean, they did a few days ago, but back then they said, let's make the claim and attribute it to England, no matter if it's true or not, because it makes the claim for war. They lied. Demonstrably, they lied. And nobody's pointing that out.
Well, I think people are pointing it out, Chris. What you had coming from a Republican-dominated Senate was a unanimous report which said that the intelligence was in error, it was faulty, it was wrong. What clearly the Republicans did not want to get into is the role that the Bush administration played in kind of encouraging that kind of intelligence. You know, if you are the President of the United States, Chris, and you make it very clear over and over again that you want to go to war, that you believe that Saddam has weapons of mass destruction, you believe that there's a link between Saddam and al-Qaeda, you know what? There are people who are going to give you that information. It may be flimsy, it may be based on hearsay, it may be based by corrupt Iraqis who would love to get back into their own country in power. But that's what you will hear, and that's what you will provide. That's the aspect of the intelligence report that really was not gone into at any length. They chose not to get into that one because that would cast a whole lot of blame on the Bush administration.
Yeah, and
they preferred to focus on the CIA.
And that's coming out after the elections, right?
Yeah.
It's 20 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America.
Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Got a song about a soldier riding somewhere on a train. Empty sleep into his shoulder.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders on the line with us. If you'd like to talk with Bernie, 1-866-889-8894. And let's go right to the lines as they're all lit up here. Randy in Baker City, Oregon is on the line. Hey, Randy, welcome to the show.
Can you hear me, Tom?
Can hear you just fine.
Thank you. I enjoyed your book, We the People, very much. Highly recommend it to everybody.
Thank you.
And Bernie, I saw you in Orwell Rolls in His Grave, so I'm able to put a face with the voice.
Thank you.
The question I have is, Fahrenheit 9/11 begins with a scene, Al Gore is presiding over the Congress, is it? And he is, they're tallying the electoral votes.
Yes.
We have congressperson after congressperson coming forward and raising objections. And every time they raise an objection, he says, is your objection signed by a senator? And they say no. He tells them to sit down. The next one comes forward. I'm wondering if you could explain what happened.
Sure.
And also deeper, what happened? Why would not a senator have signed any of that?
I'll tell you what. I mean, and I'm not going to tell you I know all of the details on those things, but my overall impression was this. At the end of the election, obviously, there is Al Gore up there, the guy who had lost the election. Who, as vice president, was still president of the Senate. And I think what Gore was saying is, it's over. He did not want to lead the effort anymore. He had conceded the election. And I think he believed it would not have been useful to go any further. And with Gore saying that, no other senator wanted to go forward. If no other senator had gone forward, then what the members of the House were doing were out of order. And that's the bottom line.
So it was more a symbolic protest on the part of the members of the House.
Right.
Yeah.
So what very often happens when you're watching C-SPAN and people are ruled out of order, the people who get up there, and I have done this, you know that you're going to be ruled out of order, and you're just using it as an opportunity to make your point, and that was what the Black Caucus members were doing at that moment.
Okay.
If I could mention one other thing, I heard Al Gore's campaign manager, and her name slips
Donna Brazil.
Donna Brazil,
she has a new book out, and she was talking about her book, and in that, she says, you know, the morning of the election, she's getting all these calls in Florida and find out what's going on. And what disturbed her the most as the process went on is the fact that basically the Democrats threw in a towel. To me, here you are at a poker game. You shove all the chips into the middle. The guy on the other side of the table, the Republicans, deal off the bottom of the deck. And you say, well, I guess that's that tonight. We'll have better luck next time. And if they're not willing, the Democratic Party was not willing to fight for the election, why did they even put a candidate forward, I guess, is my question.
Well, Randy, I think you make a good point in that. And I think that a lot of people around this country, inside and outside the Beltway, would agree with you. Lieberman was weak on the issue after the election. What one of the incidents... And Gore was by no means as strong as he should have been. Now, you all recall, do you recall, Randy, that scene where you had a few hundred people pounding on the doors? I think it was at Palm Beach, Florida. You recall that? These were mostly a small number of people, members of the...
I've seen so much of that, I'm not sure the exact one, but go ahead.
Well, what they were doing is intimidating, literally and physically intimidating the vote counters inside the room there.
And
it was incredible
that
most of these people were staff
to?
Or members of the United States Congress. And the fact that Democrats did not have thousands and thousands of people out to provide a line of protection and to make their objections very, very clear was disturbing. But I think Randy's point is a good point. And I hope very much, and expect very much that that will not happen again.
Yeah, the Republicans.
Kerry already a lot more aggressive in making sure that votes are going to be honestly counted in Florida, and we've got to be very vigilant on that issue.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the Republicans had organized an airlift. They were they flew down Tom DeLay's staff, right, to
well,
take part.
Wasn't only Tom
part.
DeLay's, it was others. But,
yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, Randy. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's Brunch with Bernie, our segment, our regular Friday afternoon segment with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. I like to think of you, Bernie, as the congressman for all of us. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, nearly 300 members of the American Federation of Government Employees Union marched outside the headquarters of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. They were protesting recent rulings by the authority's Federal Service Impasse Panel, a group that arbitrates union grievances. AFGE's president, John Gage, called the seven-member panel anti-union, anti-employee, and anti-collective bargaining. Gage also accused the group of imposing radical right-wing philosophies in the federal workplace. The protest was also a call for President Bush, who appointed the original seven members, to appoint a fair and independent board.
For the first time since 1999, more than 150 unions in Peru participated in a 24-hour general strike on Wednesday. They were striking against Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo. Elected with a majority of popular support, Toledo's approval rating has dipped to only 7%. More than 90,000 police officers were called out to use tear gas on the thousands of protesters blocking the streets with burning tires and debris. Demonstrators say they're angry with Toledo's free market policies and with Peru's rampant poverty. Over half of the country's population lives on less than $1.25 a day.
One of the biggest accounting firms in the country is being sued under claims that a HIV-positive man was discriminated against by management. James Keith Lackey, who was employed at the Dallas branch of KPMG, said that after he had to reveal to his supervisor, Paula Rogers, that he was battling HIV, she ordered him to wear gloves at his workstation. Another supervisor in the same department said that Rogers told others at the firm that Lackey had the virus, a violation of the Texas Health and Safety Code. According to Lackey, the complaints he made to Human Resources fell on deaf ears, and at one point he was told he should just wear the gloves to make Rogers happy. Soon he found himself transferred to the mailroom. He was terminated from KPMG in March of this year.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to approve the implementation of the U.S.-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Ranchers stand to lose significantly as tariffs on sheep and livestock are phased out. The agreement also blocks the importation of less expensive prescription drugs from Australia. The Senate is expected to vote on the agreement by August. It will likely pass and be signed by President Bush.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS has reduced the workforce in some African countries by 20%. A recent report issued by the International Labor Organization estimates that 6,000 youths are infected daily. The report goes on to say that as the trend continues, it could have a devastating effect on labor in high-prevalence African countries, and also result in lower productivity and pose a great challenge to future economic growth.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, let's get free. Great idea. Be sure you're registered to vote. Because if you want to get free, you got to participate on November 2nd. It's Tom Hartman with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to talk with Congressman Sanders. And let's see, who do we have up here? Tim in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, it's Tim, but thank you for taking my call, Tom. Congressman Sanders, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm a registered Democrat and NRA member and am concerned about the assault weapons ban, whether or not it will be sunsetted this coming month. And I've also heard that Senator Kerry has co-sponsored a bill that will expand the definition of assault weapons to include pump shotguns and other sporting weapons. I'm not a single-issue voter, but I know there are a lot out there, and this is a big concern to a lot of members of the NRA. Can you tell me what you know about Kerry's stance on the Second
Probably
Amendment?
Not as much as I should. I'm sorry, was your name Tim or?
Kim.
Ken. Kim, you raise a great question. I apologize for not being able to tell you exactly what Kerry's position is. I think what you know is that a number of years ago, the Congress passed, and I voted for, a ban on certain types of assault weapons. And if it is not renewed again, it will sunset, go out of existence. The President of the United States, to the best of my knowledge, has said that he would like to see it renewed, but of course is not putting pressure on the Republican leadership to do that. Tom DeLay, among others, wants to see it expire. My view is, as a guy coming from a rural state, I think everything being equal, we should leave gun control to the states. But I do believe that a ban on assault weapons is a good idea, because in many parts of the country, we're not talking about rural America, you're talking about cities, you have some of these drug dealers and really bad news guys using very powerful weapons against police officers. But be that as it may, whether people agree with me or not, here is the issue, Kim. The issue is, and I'm glad you pointed out that you're not just a one-issue guy, because what concerns me very much is that especially in rural America, you're having people who are seeing their jobs going to China, people who are losing their overtime, people who have no health care, people who can't afford to send their kids to college, and the NRA is coming into town and they say, well, there's only one issue out there, and that is guns. And I think people have got to look more broadly at what the issues are. Guns are an issue, and people can disagree on guns. But I would hope that working people understand that George Bush is the most anti-worker, most pro-corporate president in the modern history of the United States, and not just get caught up in that one issue. In terms of Kerry, my understanding is that he probably voted for the ban on assault weapons.
He did vote on it, and I think that with the Patriot Act, this administration is more likely to take away our guns than a Kerry administration. And I try to tell my NRA friends to vote locally for your congressmen and senators to support that, but get that monster out of the White House right now.
Kim, well, you're raising a really good point, and I'm really glad that you're doing that, because I think a lot of folks get sucked into this one issue, whether it's, you know, the constitutional
amendment,
the ban gear. And the real issue is whether your friends and their kids are going to have decent jobs, whether they're going to have health care, whether they're going to have education.
Can you afford to buy a gun?
It's
like, Kim, do your friends respond when you make that point?
They're typically one issue people, and they're going to vote for Bush.
Yeah.
I listen to NRAnews.com and call them quite a bit, try to stimulate a little conversation in that direction, and they're very polite and allow my comments, but I'm not sure I'm making a dent. They're looking for guests like you to interview and argue, and it might be a consideration on your part too there, Congressman.
Yeah, that might be. That's a good point. And Kim, the other point that you made,
which
is a very good one, is this. A lot of these guys who are concerned about guns are also concerned about freedom, the right to do what they want without government intrusion. Is that correct?
That's right. That's where I'm afraid of this administration.
That's right. Well, you tell them that these guys are gung-ho. I mean, we're fighting tooth and nail here to remove some of the more onerous aspects of the USA Patriot Act, and we're fighting against John Ashcroft and the president, who not only like this Patriot Act, everything being equal, they want to go further. And I think your friends should know that and think twice about voting for Bush if they are concerned about civil liberties in the U.S. Constitution.
Thanks for the call, Ken. We've got to move along. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Anthony in Hartford, Connecticut is on the line. Hey, Anthony, welcome to the program.
Yes, I'm a registered Democrat also, and I really do think Kerry is probably one of the first viable candidates that the Democratic Party has had in recent years. And the problem I have is I'm not really certain if he's really going to be a people's president given his background. And when I say people, I think one of the biggest issues that's going to be raised in the upcoming election is going to be health care. So my question is, do you think if Kerry is in fact elected, we'll see more of a Hillary-style health care?
Well, that's a very good question, Anthony. And let me be very honest with you. I'm an independent, not a Democrat. I'm going to do everything that I can to see that Kerry is elected, not because I've been so overwhelmingly impressed by his record or that I think he's going to be the greatest president in the history of the world. My main concern is that four more years of George Bush is going to be an absolute disaster for working families in this country. And we've got to do everything that we can to get rid of him. If Kerry is elected, at least what I can tell you, he will owe a lot to many of us who believe in national health care, the right of all Americans to have health care as a right of citizenship. He will owe a lot to the unions who want to make sure that we keep decent-paying jobs in this country, that we want to raise the minimum wage, that we don't want to do away with overtime. So one of the important things, and people sometimes lose track of this, when you elect a guy president, you're not just electing one person. You're electing all of the people who have supported him who will, in fact, gain a seat at the table. And some of us at that table believe very strongly that we have to go a lot further than Bill and Hillary Clinton wanted to go in health care, that we cannot continue to be the only country in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right of citizenship. So I think that Kerry's health care program now does not go far enough. It's a start, but it doesn't go far enough. But at least we will have a seat at the table to push him further to do something about the collapse of our current health care system.
Thanks for the call, Anthony. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Scott in Richmond, Virginia is on the line. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom. Congressman Saunders, it's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you, Scott.
Could you tell me, is it true that the House of Representatives actually applauded themselves for cutting $25,000 out of a $39 billion aid package to Saudi Arabia?
Well, what happened last night, was, I think, very symbolic, because it surprised everybody, I have to tell you. And that is the House of Representatives, by a reasonable vote, it was fairly close, for the first time, said that we have an authoritarian country in Saudi Arabia, which is dominated, of course, by people with extraordinary wealth, people who have been disseminating an extreme right-wing fundamentalist ideology, and that maybe it's time to stand up
for supporters of terrorism.
And supports terrorism. So what happens sometimes, and I know something about this because I offered an amendment last night, which also won, you have to look at the context of how the bill is offered. That was part of the Foreign Operations Appropriations Bill. So I think it was a step forward, and there was some applause for that.
But if it was half the $39 billion, then I could say applaud yourself and go out and have a beer. But $25,000 is at best symbolic.
Yes, you're right. Exactly correct. This was symbolic.
Yeah,
Thank you, sir. It's a step.
It's a step. Thanks a lot for the call, Scott. 1-866-889-8894. David in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is on the line. Hey, David.
Hi, Tom. First off, I appreciate you affording me some time yesterday. And to the congressman, I'm very perplexed. You are endorsing a socialist agenda, and I'd like for you first to address for me and tell me. If our health care is so rotten here, and if the Clintons were so great, why is it people flood to this country for our health care? And you know what? In France, Cuba, and Canada, where socialized medicine, the only benefit to that is the prescription prices. But
boy,
outside of that,
David, you are misinformed, man.
Let me respond. David, I mean, you're incorrectly paraphrasing me, David. Number one, I did not say the Clintons were so great. In fact, I was not supportive of their health care plan. Number two, to lump Cuba and France together is silly. One is a poor country, a developing country. One is a major first world country. Number three, people are not flocking. Yeah, people do come to this country from healthcare. You know who comes to this country? Usually people who are millionaires and billionaires. David, I happen to live at the northern tier. I live an hour away from the Canadian border. And where I live, people do go over the border, but they're going from the northern part of the United States into Canada for dental care, for prescription drugs, for health care. Now, the fact of the matter is, every single country on earth except the United States, major countries, has a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people. On top of that, we spend twice as much per person on health care as the Canadians, three times more than the British. Is the Canadian healthcare system perfect? No, it's not, and the Canadians know it. They need to put more money into it, just as they do in Great Britain. But if you look at various indices, health indices, what you will find, many parts of Europe, many parts of Scandinavia, their life expectancy is longer than ours. Their other healthcare issues rank up higher than we do. Bottom line is, we are spending enough money to provide quality health care to all people, and we're not doing it.
Canada is spending less than one half per person, per capita, in terms of health care total than the United States does, and yet they've been able to meet the needs of all of their citizens.
And they recognize, by the way, Tom, that they should spend more.
Yeah.
But the
point
is,
the big debate that's going on there. Yeah.
With the incredible amount, over $1 trillion a year that we spend, we can provide quality care, comprehensive care, to all Americans. Our system is incredibly wasteful. Costs are soaring. Workers are being asked to pay more and more in terms of premiums and co-payments, deductibles. And it's a system that needs radical reform.
Yeah. Now, Bernie, just to put one final point on this before we move, we've got a couple more callers to do. But a single-payer system like they have in Germany, I used to live in Germany, and it's very, very convenient. I mean, you just show up at the doctor's office, show your ID card, and boom, the government pays for it, is very different from the more closer to socialized medicine
right.
like they have in the United Kingdom, which I've also used. We were once in London, and our daughter got sick, and we went down to the, you know, long story, but anyway. But the English system, in the British system, the government actually owns much of the
That's
healthcare
exactly.
apparatus, whereas
Britain
in Germany...
Britain has a socialized healthcare system. Canada is not. It's a single-payer system
right.
where you have government-run insurance.
Yeah, and now I'm personally in favor of single-payer. I don't think socialized medicine is a good idea. What are your thoughts on that?
I certainly can live with a well-funded single-payer system like Canada's.
Yeah, okay. 1-866-889-8894. We'll move along here. Mary in Grand Rapids, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Mary.
Hello. Yes, Hi. I had a question for the senator. There is some activity in the Congress about nutritional supplements. And it's always confounded me that the Republicans vote in favor of people being able to choose their own supplements, and yet the Democrats tend to fight this one very personal type of health care. And I just don't understand why the two parties break down that way.
But that's interesting. And I think you're right, Mary. I think I happen to support everything being equal, people being able to make their own health care choices, including the supplements. And I think while there has been some documentation of some people becoming ill or dying, it's relatively few numbers. And I think obviously the government has a role to play to make sure that dangerous products are not on the market, for sure.
Yeah, like they just
I think everything
defender.
Being equal, people do have the right to choose. I think what the position of some Democrats has been is they want the FDA to play a more aggressive role in regulating those products.
Yeah.
But I tend to agree with you that everything being equal, of course, while the government must play a role to make sure that people aren't getting sick and there aren't really scam products out there, people should have the choice.
Yeah,
I would really love to have an agency like only with a natural focus in mind, because the FDA is tied hand in hand with the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point also, and I think one of the things that we are seeing in this country, and we've had meetings in Vermont, we've hundreds and hundreds of people out to look at alternative health care. All over this country, people are flocking to varieties of healthcare, whether it is acupuncture, whether it's chiropractic care, whether it's different approaches toward nutrition and diet. which have not been part of mainstream medicine. But for a whole lot of reasons, we're seeing millions of Americans look to alternatives, and everything being equal, I think we've got to support that effort.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894. Emmy in Pennsylvania is on the line. We're down to about a minute and a half here in this segment. Emmy, what's up?
Hi, Mr. Sanders. I was wondering if you could, I have a question about the Sybil Edmonds case. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Which case?
The FBI whistleblower.
Sybil Edmonds. You know, last week the justice, or I should say the federal judge, they dismissed her suit. And I was wondering, isn't the Senate responsible for challenging that? I mean, this case is just unbelievable.
Back me up again. I didn't hear you.
Sybil Edmonds, Bernie, is the woman who was hired by the FBI right after 9/11 and discovered apparently a couple of spies within the FBI and shoddy workmanship and whatnot. And Ashcroft then, and she testified before Congress 2 years ago.
Okay.
Ashcroft has retroactively classified her testimony. They're harassing her. She's got this lawsuit.
Yes, the answer to the question, of course, the Senate has the power to do what it wants and to get that information out.
Yeah, so the Senate has the power to get it out, but being controlled by the Republican majority, it ain't going to happen soon, right?
That's quite right,
yeah. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Program. Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. 1-866-889-8894. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the work Yorker's Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. Recently, a group of workers gathered in the Garment District in New York City to launch the Ain't I a Woman campaign, a national boycott against Liberty Apparel. Rebecca Miles was there.
The campaign demands that the manufacturer be accountable to their subcontracted workers. In 1999, 26 garment workers sued Liberty Apparel for sweatshop conditions in their U.S. contracted factories and failure to pay minimum wage. Many workers, when paid, were earning $3 an hour. Anna Chong from the Ain't I a Woman campaign.
It's been 5 years. For 5 years, they still refuse to pay their workers. Their kids are grown and they have not received a single cent. By not paying these workers, they're actually trying to change the law. They're actually trying to change the Fair Labor Standards Act. And because this will affect workers across the country, this boycott is also about holding all manufacturers accountable and all companies that subcontract accountable, and for them to stop hiding behind the subcontracting system.
What concerns workers is the increase in subcontracting, especially where subcontractors are not accountable when accidents happen on the job, or where the company suddenly disappears when there is any kind of protest, as in the case of Liberty Apparel and its subcontractor. David Ting, a high school student whose mother worked long hours in a nail salon.
The subcontracting system is now limited to the garment industry. White-collar workers such as lawyers and paralegals are employed through temp agencies. And although they are well paid, they have absolutely no control of their working hours and may work for years without contract.
We were unable to contact Liberty Apparel Company as the line was constantly busy. Their clothing line is sold in outlets like Conway and Family Dollar for families on tight incomes. And ironically, is durable clothing for workers and hunters. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I fold it up and put it in my shirt. Pick up my gun and get back to work. And it keeps me driving on.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the first hour of our Friday afternoon program, Brunch with Bernie. Bernie, we've got, I think, three callers here. Let's try and get through them real quickly here. We've got about 3 minutes. 1-866-889-8894. Emmy in Pennsylvania is on the line. Emmy, you're live.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Florence Murphy.
I'm sorry. Florence in Grand Rapids, right? Yeah.
Right.
Hey, Florence, you're live. I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong part of the screen.
I wanted to ask the congressman, I think, a very, very important question. I'm very concerned about the fact that Tom DeLay has so much power in that House of Representatives, and things are just beginning to come out a little bit. Is there any hope that we can get rid of this horrible person?
Well, certainly the main hope is that in November, the Republicans will lose control of the House. And when you Republicans lose control of the House, Tom DeLay is no longer majority leader. Tom DeLay is a very strong-willed, disciplined, tough guy. He's now under a number of investigations, by the way, for illegal activity. He runs this House, in a very, very authoritarian way. And I absolutely agree with you that this country will be better off when the delay is not in power.
Okay, Jim from Santa Fe is on. We got about a minute left. Hey, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
What's up?
Okay, I would like to say something about the nutrition that the congressman mentioned earlier, and that the Scandinavian people have a higher life expectancy than we do. First of all, genetically modified foods are not allowed in most European states, the long-term effects of genetic modification or even chemical use on the foods isn't quite clear on the effects of the human body. And also that the FDA is defining our proper diet is run by the cattle industry, the corn industry of the Midwest,
and the pharmaceutical industry and whatnot. Jim, I got to cut you off here. Bernie,
Jim makes
you want to respond
point.
Real quickly?
I share Jim's concerns about GMOs. Fought very hard to make sure that the Monsanto's BST was not introduced in the market. to increase milk production, for example. But Jim makes a very good point.
And in Europe, they you know, Norway, yesterday, the United Nations, Norway, number one place in the world to live. Interesting. Congressman Bernie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Tom, thank you.
It is great. It is always great to have you here. It's Congressman Bernie Sanders of the Tom Hartman Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, nearly 300 members of the American Federation of Government Employees Union marched outside the headquarters of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. They were protesting recent rulings by the authority's Federal Service Impasse Panel, a group that arbitrates union grievances. AFGE's president, John Gage, called the seven-member panel anti-union, anti-employee, and anti-collective bargaining. Gage also accused the group of imposing radical right-wing philosophies in the federal workplace. The protest was also a call for President Bush, who appointed the original seven members, to appoint a fair and independent board.
For the first time since 1999, more than 150 unions in Peru participated in a 24-hour general strike on Wednesday. They were striking against Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo. Elected with a majority of popular support, Toledo's approval rating has dipped to only 7%. More than 90,000 police officers were called out to use tear gas on the thousands of protesters blocking the streets with burning tires and debris. Demonstrators say they're angry with Toledo's free market policies and with Peru's rampant poverty. Over half of the country's population lives on less than $1.25 a day.
One of the biggest accounting firms in the country is being sued under claims that a HIV-positive man was discriminated against by management. James Keith Lackey, who was employed at the Dallas branch of KPMG, said that after he had to reveal to his supervisor, Paula Rogers, that he was battling HIV, she ordered him to wear gloves at his workstation. Another supervisor in the same department said that Rogers told others at the firm that Lackey had the virus, a violation of the Texas Health and Safety Code. According to Lackey, the complaints he made to Human Resources fell on deaf ears, and at one point he was told he should just wear the gloves to make Rogers happy. Soon he found himself transferred to the mailroom. He was terminated from KPMG in March of this year.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to approve the implementation of the U.S.-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Ranchers stand to lose significantly as tariffs on sheep and livestock are phased out. The agreement also blocks the importation of less expensive prescription drugs from Australia. The Senate is expected to vote on the agreement by August. It will likely pass and be signed by President Bush.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS has reduced the workforce in some African countries by 20%. A recent report issued by the International Labor Organization estimates that 6,000 youths are infected daily. The report goes on to say that as the trend continues, it could have a devastating effect on labor in high-prevalence African countries, and also result in lower productivity and pose a great challenge to future economic growth.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Take the A-Train. Ride that Wabash Cannonball. Hear the clickety-clack of the Orange Blossom Special. Trains are more than a part of our history. They're a rich part of our culture. But are they a part of our future? I'm not talking here about the enormous potential of long-distance trains, upgrading Amtrak and building a top-of-the-line high-speed train system between our population centers. Rather, I'm focused today on the promise of rail travel within our great metro areas. I've ridden these local systems in the Bay Area, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and elsewhere. They're simple, handy, efficient, fast, inexpensive, and a joyous way to get to where you're going. They also move hundreds of thousands of people a day without creating traffic jams or smog. And they create thousands of good jobs at good wages. Here's what one observer says. Mass transit is an excellent substitute for roads. These are not the words of some anti-auto Earth Firster, but of Paul Wyrick, an icon of right-wing thinking. To him, urban train systems make all kinds of sense and are a legitimate focus for federal, state, and local spending. Public demand for these systems is strong. Ridership is up 21% in the last 5 years. New systems in Dallas, Denver, Salt Lake City, and elsewhere are exceeding expectations, and there's a backlog of 200 local transit projects seeking federal matching funds. There's the problem. The Bushites, tagged by Wyrick as the most anti-rail administration in our country's history of mass transit, is trying to gut federal support. In their zeal for fiscal conservatism, writes Wyrick, they are prepared to scuttle one of the most successful government programs of all time. This is Jim Hightower saying, Missing the Train, a new report by the Sierra Club, highlights projects in Tampa Bay, Portland, Houston, Milwaukee, and elsewhere endangered by Bush's cuts. Get a copy, 202-675-7915.
LendingTree.com presents How to Get Out from Under Debt. First, take an average guy.
Hello.
Then add some credit card debt, a car payment, and a student loan.
How?
To get out from under all this debt, get a debt consolidation loan from LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, my friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system and beaming around the planet on radiopower.org and also on cable radio network now on as well as Channel 4, which carries all three of ours, Channel 1, CRN Channel 1, on cable systems literally from Alaska to Maine. So welcome back. It's an interesting thing about doing this show is sort of the good and the bad and the ugly part of it, right? The feedback you get. Yeah. I have to say, first of all, it's the best way to reach me. If you want to
take me to the cleaners or, you know, yell at me or what, feel free to go to our message board, TomHartman.com, and post there. If it's not obscene, we won't delete it. Anyhow, here the first, the good. This from, I won't give her last name, but from Kendra. I live in Birmingham, Alabama, the Bush Bible Belt. Listening to your program on my computer at work not only educates me, but it literally brightens my day. I have people around me praising Bush all the time. Your program gives me answers to these people's remarks and comments. They get all their information straight from Limbaugh and Hannity, so I just wanted to write and say thank you. I absolutely praise your effort to take this country back from Bush and hope that everyone appreciates you as much as I do. Keep it up. Well, thank you. I will. And then the bad, this from Richard. He says, I happened to catch your show on CRN today. Was surprised that for one who claims to be part of the radical middle, he is, in fact, nothing more than a true card-carrying loony leftist. Please don't try to fool people into thinking you are part of the mainstream. Be honest and tell people who you really are and that you what you stand for is extreme liberalism. Agree with him or not, Rush Limbaugh is honest about who he is and what his politics are. Oh, yes, that's the real mainstream. Did you hear it? I shouldn't go off on it. Rush, no, I'm not going to. Anyhow, Mr. Hartman, you are a phony like the majority of those on the extreme left, and your views are not those of the radical middle that you proclaim to be speaking on behalf of. Well, thank you, Richard. I actually replied to Richard and said, you know, call me on the air. Let's talk about any one issue. And we'll see where the majority of American really stands. And the ugly, this is from Haskell D. at BellSouth.net. I'm not one given to coming out of the gate swinging, but you're a liberal moron that hates this country and home. What's the matter, commie? Too lazy to get a job? Hate yourself so bad you have to take out your own inadequacies with your woman on your country? You're a punk taking it in the S-word shoot every night from your liberal buddies, you useful idiot. Can't you feel the love? Just because you have First Amendment rights doesn't give you the right to be listened to. Shut up! And about 30 exclamation marks. Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, it's fascinating. You know you're doing something right. I should have started this thing. I actually get hate mail from the left as well as from the right. You know, people say, hey, you're not, you know, you got to be talking about it. You know, it's time to impeach George Bush. Why don't you get into that area? And stuff like that. You know, it's how, you know, why are you not talking about the conspiracy where, you know, so. I guess I'm doing something right. At least somebody is listening. We got a lot of folks anyhow. The chat room, by the way, is filling out. Geez, a whole bunch of folks in there today. You can get to the chat room. Go to TomHartman.com and click on live chat. Hot news. This hot off the presses. This was originally broke, this story, by the Sydney Morning News, or the Sydney Morning Herald, which is the largest newspaper in Sydney, Australia. Broke a few hours ago, and now ABC News has picked it up and several other publications in the United States. They not only double fact-checked this thing, there are multiple witnesses, and they interviewed them separately. The witnesses had never talked to each other, and they all gave the same story. This is part of it. So here's the story from the Sydney Morning News, Sydney Morning Herald, excuse me. Ayad Alawi, the new prime minister of Iraq, this is our guy, right? Now, keep in mind, Saddam Hussein was our guy back in, what was it, 57, I think? I forget which year it was that we encouraged the coup and helped install Saddam Hussein. And then, of course, we provided him with intelligence in his war against Iran. Don Rumsfeld went over during the Reagan administration and provided him with more gas, poison gas, a week after he had gassed the Kurds. That's that famous picture of Don Rumsfeld shaking Saddam's hands. That was a week after, and we knew, the world knew, a week after he had gassed the Kurds. We seem to like strong men in Iraq. Well, here's the story. Ayad Alawi, the new prime minister of Iraq, pulled a pistol and executed as many as 6 suspected insurgents at a Baghdad police station just days before Washington handed control of the country to his interim government, according to 2 people who allege they witnessed the killings. They say the prisoners, handcuffed and blindfolded, were lined up against a wall in a courtyard adjacent to the maximum security cell block in which they were held at the Al-Amariya Security Center in the city's southwestern suburbs. They said Dr. Alawi told onlookers the victims had killed as many as 50 Iraqis and they, quote, deserved worse than death. The Prime Minister's office has denied this, by the way. But the informants told the Herald that Dr. Alawi shot each young man in the head as about a dozen Iraqi policemen and four Americans from the Prime Minister's personal security team, those would have been private contractors, watched in stunned silence. Also, it used to be known as mercenaries. But Iraq's Interior Minister, Fala al-Naguib, is said to have looked on and congratulated him when the job was done. Mr. Naguib's office has issued a verbal denial. The names of three of the alleged victims have been obtained by the Herald. One of the witnesses claimed that before killing the prisoners, Dr. Alawi told those around him that he wanted to send a clear message to the police on how to deal with insurgents. Quote, the prisoners were against the wall and we were standing in the courtyard when the Interior Minister said he would like to kill them all on the spot. Alawi said they deserved worse than death, but then he pulled the pistol from his belt and started shooting them, end quote. This is from one of the people who was there. Reenacting the killings, one witness stood 3 or 4 meters in front of a wall and swung his outstretched arm in an even arc left to right, jerking his wrist to mimic the recoil as each bullet was fired. Then he raised a hand to his brow, saying he was very close. Each was shot in the head. The witnesses said 7 prisoners had been brought out into the courtyard, but the last man in the line was only wounded. In the neck, said one witness, and the chest, said the other. Given Dr. Now, this I'm just reading this straight from the Sydney Morning Herald. And as I said, other, you know, American news sources have picked this up now. This is where it originated. But apparently it's been corroborated by others. The witnesses said Given Dr. Alawi's role as the leader of the U.S. experiment in planting a model democracy in the Middle East, allegations of a return to the cold-blooded tactics of his predecessor are likely to stir a simmering debate on how well Washington knows its man in Baghdad and precisely what he envisages for the new Iraq. Now, now we get into the really interesting part of this story. This is the, I think, the most fascinating part of it, and that is that these witnesses who told this story to the reporter for the Sydney Morning Herald did not think of themselves as whistleblowers. They weren't ratting this guy out. They were bragging. He is so cool. We have got another guy here running this country who really knows how to take care of people. Right? Here's the story. Let's see here. There is much debate and rumor in Baghdad about the Prime Minister's capacity for brutality, but this is the first time eyewitness accounts have been obtained. Now, you know what this guy did before he became Prime Minister? We'll get to that in just a second. A former CIA officer, Vincent Canestrano, recently told The New Yorker, quote, if you're asking me if Alawi has blood on his hands from his days in London, the answer is yes, he does. He was a paid Mukhabarat intelligence agent for the Iraqis, and he was involved in dirty stuff, end quote. Dirty stuff being spook slang for killing people. In Baghdad, varying accounts of the shootings are interpreted by observers as useful to a little-known politician who, after 33 years in exile, needs to prove his leadership credentials as a strong man in a war-ravaged country that has no experience of democracy. See, they're bragging about this. This story, when it makes the news, when it makes the press in Baghdad, as it no doubt already has, is going to help him. It's going to help him. Dr. Alawi's statement dismissed the allegations as rumors instigated by enemies of his interim government, but in a sharp reminder of the Iraqi hunger for security above all else, the witnesses did not perceive themselves as whistleblowers. In interviews with the Herald, they were enthusiastic about such killings, and one of them arguing, these criminals were terrorists. They are the ones who plant the bombs. Before the shootings, the 58-year-old prime minister is said to have told the policemen that they must have courage in their work and that he would shield them from any repercussions if they killed insurgents in the course of their duty. The witnesses said the Iraqi police observers were shocked and surprised, but asked what message they might take from such an act. One said, quote, any terrorist in Iraq should have the same destiny. This is the new Iraq. Alawi wanted to send a message to his policemen and soldiers not to be scared if they kill anyone, especially they are not to worry about tribal revenge. He said there would be an order from him and the Interior Ministry that all would be fully protected. I'm quoting now from the informant. He told them, "We must destroy anyone who wants to destroy Iraq and kill our people." At first, they were surprised. "I was scared. But now the police seem to be very happy about this. There was no anger at all because so many policemen have been killed by these criminals." End quote. Dr. Alawi had made a surprise visit to the complex. They said neither witness could give a specific date for the killings, but their accounts narrow the time frame to on or around the third weekend in June, about a week before the rushed handover of power in Iraq, and more than 3 weeks after Dr. Alawi was named as the interim prime minister. Yep, we're bringing democracy to the Middle East in a hurry. 18 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Sheila in Denver's on the line. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, I don't mean to change the subject, but I do love your show. Thank you for doing your show.
Thank you.
I listen to you 15 hours per week.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I just want to give you high praise. I value your show.
So there must be a butt coming.
I give you a lot of my time.
Okay, we got about a minute and a half here, Sheila. What's up?
I think I found one piece of legislation that benefits individuals.
Oh, our contest! Yes, we have been running this contest now for almost a year, ever since we had Congressman Tom Tancredo on from Colorado, and a Republican, and I said, please name one piece of legislation that the Republicans have put forward, or the Bush administration has put forward, that actually benefits human beings above corporations, and he couldn't do it. And you think you have won the prize, Sheila?
I think Bush signed one yesterday. I believe it's House Resolution 2622.
Mm-hmm.
Provides for tougher penalties for crimes involving identity theft.
Identity theft, right. Okay, I will go along with that. Now, there is a caveat on that, Sheila. First of all, this was a slam dunk. Everybody's opposed to the identity theft. And the problem with this piece of legislation is that it has minimum mandatory sentences. It takes discretion for sentencing away from the judges, which is one of the reasons why many people opposed it. The judges of America are really very concerned about this. They feel like they should have the right and the power, and I agree with them. So I think it's a flawed piece of legislation, but it's not benefiting corporations. So you win. Hang on. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get your address. It's Tom Hartman, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'm going to show you love in every language. I'm going to speak
and welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number 1-866, one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. One of the folks in our chat room quoting from another one of the news stories. The one that I have here is from the Sydney Morning Herald. But one of the other media, one witness justified the shootings as an unintended act of mercy. Quote, "They were happy to die because they had already been beaten by the police for 2 to 8 hours a day to make them talk." And this, the terrorists executed by Ayed Alawi, the new prime minister of Iraq, 1 week before we gave him the keys to the, what it looks like is going to become a kingdom again. This is, Gandhi used to repeatedly make the point that the means by which you achieve something will influence it. That you can't bring about peace by violence, generally speaking. Now, you can end violence with violence. This is a really important distinction. In World War II, you had two countries that had essentially gone crazy, Germany and Japan. And their people, at some deep level, understood that their leaders had gone crazy. The Japanese had been worshiping the emperor as the descendant literally of the sun. I mean, in the old Japanese Shinto religion, the sun was the god of the skies, and the sun gave birth to the first man, and that first man was the oldest ancestor of the emperor of Japan, who was divine. Same way Christians talk about Jesus as being divine, who was literally divine. And so, to crash a kamikaze plane onto the deck of an aircraft carrier was to immediately go to heaven and be there with all of the descendants of the emperor, the previous incarnations of divinity, and was this marvelous thing. And you had to do whatever the emperor said. And the emperor had put Tojo in charge, and Tojo said, okay, let's, the rape of Nanking, let's, do horrible things. And they did. And the Germans, Hitler promised them a new form of Christianity, a revival, actually, is how he referred to it, a revival of Christianity, what he called a new Christianity, reinvigorating it.
and purifying the race to create 1,000 years of peace. And, you know, some people bought it. And they got it that, you know, the people who bought into it really believed that this was, you know, some kind of positive thing that they were going to accomplish. And then after the war, and we confronted those two with violence because they were behaving violently. I mean, both of these countries were aggressors. And we stopped them. America traditionally has not started wars. We've stopped them. We stopped them. And when their violence was stopped by our violence, their people looked around and said, oh, my God, we have been insane. Look at what we've done. Look at the Holocaust. Look at at Nanking. Look at what. And that was it. No American soldier, not one American soldier has died in post-World War II Japan or Germany as a result of hostile fire. Not one. And you know, so that's, you know, it's, but this is not how it's happened in Iraq, because in Iraq, they're seeing us the way the rest of the world saw the Germans and the Japanese, as the aggressors. And so they're fighting back. And and now we've got this situation with Alawi and Fallujah. You know, the news from Fallujah, I've got to share this with you right after the break. It's just absolutely, absolutely startling. And it's not, apparently not just Fallujah. But that's the most obvious. You're not. This is the news that you're not hearing so much. Why? Well, it's not because conspiracy. It's because the reporters are afraid to go into these areas. I'll tell you about it right after the break. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you on the True People's Radio. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, nearly 300 members of the American Federation of Government Employees Union marched outside the headquarters of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. They were protesting recent rulings by the authority's Federal Service Impasse Panel, a group that arbitrates union grievances. AFGE's president, John Gage, called the seven-member panel anti-union, anti-employee, and anti-collective bargaining. Gage also accused the group of imposing radical right-wing philosophies in the federal workplace. The protest was also a call for President Bush, who appointed the original seven members, to appoint a fair and independent board.
For the first time since 1999, more than 150 unions in Peru participated in a 24-hour general strike on Wednesday. They were striking against Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo. Elected with a majority of popular support, Toledo's approval rating has dipped to only 7%. More than 90,000 police officers were called out to use tear gas on the thousands of protesters blocking the streets with burning tires and debris. Demonstrators say they're angry with Toledo's free market policies and with Peru's rampant poverty. Over half of the country's population lives on less than $1.25 a day.
One of the biggest accounting firms in the country is being sued under claims that a HIV-positive man was discriminated against by management. James Keith Lackey, who was employed at the Dallas branch of KPMG, said that after he had to reveal to his supervisor, Paula Rogers, that he was battling HIV, she ordered him to wear gloves at his workstation. Another supervisor in the same department said that Rogers told others at the firm that Lackey had the virus, a violation of the Texas Health and Safety Code. According to Lackey, the complaints he made to Human Resources fell on deaf ears, and at one point he was told he should just wear the gloves to make Rogers happy. Soon he found himself transferred to the mailroom. He was terminated from KPMG in March of this year.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to approve the implementation of the U.S.-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Ranchers stand to lose significantly as tariffs on sheep and livestock are phased out. The agreement also blocks the importation of less expensive prescription drugs from Australia. The Senate is expected to vote on the agreement by August. It will likely pass and be signed by President Bush.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS has reduced the workforce in some African countries by 20%. A recent report issued by the International Labor Organization estimates that 6,000 youths are infected daily. The report goes on to say that as the trend continues, it could have a devastating effect on labor in high-prevalence African countries, and also result in lower productivity and pose a great challenge to future economic growth.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Bush administration faces growing challenges, writes Robin Wright and Bradley Graham in the Washington Post yesterday. The Bush administration faces growing challenges in holding together the 32-nation coalition deployed in Iraq. Four countries already gone, another four due to leave by September, and others now making known their intention to wind down or depart before the political transition is complete next year, according to officials from 28 participating countries. This situation with the Filipinos, I got to say, you know, this, if I was the president of the Philippines, this would be one of the hardest decisions. I mean, here they had, what, like 50 soldiers in Iraq? They were not doing anything important. I mean, they were basically there because George Bush had harassed them into it. You know, hey, you guys are allies of ours. You're getting foreign aid money from us. Do you want to continue to get this? And you know, one of their guys gets captured, or a Filipino gets captured, and, you know, hey, pulling our 50 guys out, they're going to go out in August anyway. Do we keep them in there an extra 4 weeks and have this guy lose his life, or do we pull him out now and save his life, but telegraph the message to those who take hostages that it is a technique that works? Now, clearly, in terms of international diplomacy, you don't do this. You don't give in to hostage takers. But the Filipinos have done it, and now there's an echo. Norway has quietly pulled out its 155 military engineers this month, leaving behind only 15 people. New Zealand intends to pull out its 60 people by September. This is the coalition, right, that George Bush is so proud of. 60 people from New Zealand, while Thailand plans to withdraw its 450 troops that same month. The Netherlands is likely to pull out next spring after the first of the three Iraqi elections. The Polish say that they have one of the larger contingents, maybe 1,000 or so. They're going to leave in mid-year next year, according to their diplomats. Moldova's contingent has dropped from 42 people down to 12. Singapore has quietly reduced its presence from 191 to 33. Australia, which had 2,000 troops during the war, is down to 880, and of them, only 250 are actually in Iraq. I mean, even in Italy, which is run by a right-wing crank, you know, Silvio Berlusconi, the House of Deputies vote to extend the deployment of Italian soldiers was 257 to 207. Spain, of course, pulled out 1,300 troops, which led Honduras and the Dominican Republic to do the same thing with their few hundred troops. Albania, however, is the shining star in George Bush's horizon. Albanian ambassador Satos Tarisa says, "We're the most pro-U.S. nation in Europe, and they have pledged to increase the number of their troops from 71 to 200 sometime in the next year." Remarkable. By the way, I just Sheila, just in Denver, who had called earlier, just to remind, you know, to let you know, I I don't think I mentioned, Sheila won a copy of my new book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. And so we've given away our book, but we'll continue the contest just, you know, for the heck of it. I mean, if you can come up with something that the Republicans have done that actually benefits We the People rather than corporations. Now, I'm inclined to say that anything that has minimum mandatory sentencing is benefiting the fastest growing corporate sector in America that is engaged in the construction industry, and that is private prisons. Private prisons are the, if not one of the, as of about 8 months ago, the last time I did a story on this, they were the fastest growing individual specific market niche sector in the United States economy. And, you know, for-profit corporations, and they're huge donors to the Republican Party. And to the Democrats as well. But largely, you know, the majority of it goes to Republicans. So, you know, it's hard to say. Anyhow, and, Sarah in Santa Fe, I was just going to pick up your call and you dropped off. So if you want to call back, feel free. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The situation in Fallujah. Here we have this story of Alawi, our guy. You know, just like Saddam was our guy right up until 91. And for that matter, Osama bin Laden was our guy. This is, you know, this isn't like revisionist history. I mean, this is something that everybody in the United States knew in the 1980s, that we were supporting a group of Muslim Islamic fundamentalists in Afghanistan in their battle against the nasty Soviets. The Reagan administration was funding these folks. And who were they? It was Osama bin Laden and Mullah Omar. We funded the Taliban, and we paid for, you and I, with our tax dollars during the Reagan administration, we paid for the creation of Al-Qaeda, which came into being to fight against the godless communists of the Soviet Union who were trying to control the nation of Afghanistan so that they could run a gas pipeline across Afghanistan. We didn't think that was a good idea. We didn't want them doing that. No, in fact, Unocal, the oil company, the American oil company, Unocal, wanted to run its own gas pipeline and had one of their consultants working on that project, his name, Hamid Karzai. That sounds familiar. He's currently the prime minister of Afghanistan. But this, of course, was in the last decade. So anyhow, what's happened? And oddly, you know, that's the point. Michael Moore makes that point in his movie Fahrenheit 9/11, and it's got the right wing all running around going, he says that George Bush had something to do with 9/11. And you know, we only attacked Afghanistan because we wanted a gas pipeline. And no, Moore is not saying that. And I'm not saying that either. He's just pointing out a little bit of history. You know, it's useful to know history, isn't it? I mean, it's useful to know it as it's happening. For example, have you seen on the evening news in the last 3 months or so a report from inside Fallujah, where a reporter actually went inside Fallujah and filed a report? You haven't? Well, there's been one. He's an Arab. Hamza Hamdawi went into Fallujah, and you know he was able to go in because he's from the local area and he looked like a local, and so they didn't shoot him. You'll recall Fallujah was the town where the four American mercenaries or contractors or whatever were killed, burned, and then hung from the bridge. I mean, this is a horrific thing. A horrific thing. Nobody should do that. And interestingly, the imams, the religious leaders of Fallujah condemned it. Do not do this. And, you know, it hasn't happened since. But so we were going to go into Fallujah and take these guys out. we still think that maybe one of Osama's guys is in Fallujah. But every time we tried to get in there, we killed some 600 civilians trying to get into Fallujah. They took the soccer field and turned it into a mass grave, buried 600 people. That footage was shown on the news here in the United States. Briefly. It was a one-day story, but it was shown. And it just wasn't quite working out. I mean, every time we tried to go in, we'd kind of, you know, heavy-handedly kill a whole bunch of civilians. And it was just, you know, really angering the citizens of Fallujah. They were not pleased. So finally, we got one of Saddam's old guys, a former general in his army, and said, you know, can you go in there along with some of your fellows? And he says, sure, no problem. I'll go in. I'll take Fallujah. And they just walk down the street, and everybody comes out and goes, hey, and applauds them. But no Americans have gone in there since. And so here, Hamza Hendawi reports for the Associated Press. Byline Fallujah. This is actually a few weeks ago. With U.S. Marines gone and central government authority virtually non-existent, Fallujah resembles an Islamic mini-state. And keep in mind, this isn't just happening in Fallujah. This is happening in communities all over Iraq right now. Anyone caught selling alcohol is flogged and paraded in the city. Men are encouraged to grow beards, and barbers are warned against giving, quote, Western, end quote, haircuts. A cleric, Abdul Qatar Al-Alawsi, says, after all the blood that was shed and the lives that were lost, we shall only accept God's law in Fallujah. Sort of the Jerry Falwell of Fallujah here. He says, we must capitalize on our victory over the Americans and implement Islamic Sharia law. The departure of the Marines, the Associated Press notes, under an agreement that ended the three-week siege last month, has enabled hardline Islamic leaders to assert their power in this once restive city 30 miles west of Baghdad. Some were active in defending the city against the Marines and have profited by a perception, both here and elsewhere in Iraq, that the Mujahideen, or Islamic holy warriors, defeated a superpower. Steps taken by the Mujahideen over the past month have gone beyond simply encouraging piety. The Mujahideen, the group that Osama bin Laden started in Afghanistan 20 years ago or more. Sunday, for example, this is in Fallujah, scores of masked Mujahideen shouting Allahu Akbar, or God is great, paraded four men stripped to their underpants atop the back of a pickup truck that drove through the city. Their backs were bleeding from 80 lashes they had received as punishment for selling alcohol. That from the Associated Press. Now, you know, I'm not here to say, gee, I think that people should be able to sell booze in Iraq. I mean, I'm all in favor of the Iraqi people deciding for themselves. And if they want to have an Islamic Republic, let them have an Islamic Republic. The problem from the point of view of the policymakers in Washington, D.C., however, is that if you look back and you see that in March of 2001, you had Dick Cheney sitting around the table with representatives of Enron and other major American oil companies. And you can see the documents from the lawsuit by Judicial Watch on their at their website, judicialwatch.org, sitting around the table with these folks and carving up Iraq. There's actually a map of Iraq with the 100 more or less oil fields identified on it. And then a list, a printed list called Potential Suitors for Iraqi Oil, or words to that effect, and a list of companies, nations and companies, and which oil fields, which companies might be interested in buying. Now, as soon as the Iraq invasion was over last year, friends and relatives of George Bush set up organizations. One of his old campaign managers was sent over to Iraq to head up the group that was in charge of selling off to private, largely American corporations, the 135 different Iraqi industries that were owned by the government. So you got the situation here where a couple of oil industry executives, our president and vice president of the United States. Iraq is, as Dick Cheney said, well, I just let him say it. He says it well.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. And so, and there is no connection between 9/11 and Iraq, as George Bush said.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th. No
evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September 11th, no. But, you know, when he declared war on Iraq, he turns to the camera and says, this was just before the bombing started, and says, and now I have a word for the Iraqi people. And does he say, please don't shoot at our soldiers, please don't kill Jessica Lynch? No, he says,
your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells. The wealth that belongs to the Iraqi people.
A source of wealth that belongs to the Iraqi people. Do not destroy oil wells. And now we got a new guy in there who's going to defend the oil wells, going to defend our interests. And it looks like a few weeks ago he just executed a half a dozen people, just pulled out a gun and shot them in the head. Dr. Alawi, the new prime minister of Iraq. And this is, you know, he's being applauded by the Iraqi people for this. Hey, finally we've got somebody who's going to bring security to our country. Well, you know, longing for Saddam. I mean, the people who want Saddam back don't want him back because they like a tyrant. But, you know, security, safety, people like... We have created such a mess over there for absolutely no good reason. And 1,000 soldiers now, coalition soldiers, have lost their lives. For what? 1-866-889-8894. Your thoughts. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new, and you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Researchers learn more about whales and dolphins by doing CAT scans on their fossils. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Whales, dolphins, and porpoises have some of the largest and most complex brains of any mammals on Earth. Lori Marino wants to know more about how these creatures evolved. Marino is a neuroscientist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia.
One of the things we're interested in is how dolphins and porpoises and whales got their big brains. We know that they have very big brains, and we've done studies to show that next to humans, they're the brainiest mammals on the planet. So the question is, how did they get these big brains? Why did they get these big brains? And what do the big brains allow them to do?
Marino says the brains of many mammals are packed tightly into the skull. The brain leaves an impression in the bone that reveals details about its structure. That means the evolution of the brain is embedded inside fossils of animal skulls. But it's hard to look inside these fossils. What was once bone and brain has been transformed into a solid piece of rock. Marino has studied fossils with the medical technology used for CAT scans on people. This equipment can create a three-dimensional digital image of a living body, and it does the same thing with other types of material. Marino says it's revolutionized her line of work because it reveals different densities in fossils and outlines the parts that were once the bone of a living animal. Marino has used this technology to examine skulls of whales that are more than 30 million years old. She says the digital images are showing how whales developed the wrinkled gray matter known as the neocortex. That's the part of the brain that's critical to high-level intelligence. It's a dominant feature of the brains of whales and dolphins, and also human beings. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
If it makes you happy, it can't be that bad.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no, actually. It made Wolfie happy. I'm not sure it helped out the world. You know, here's the bottom line. It would have been so easy. It would have been so straightforward. It would have been so honest for George W. to have said to the American people what Jimmy Carter basically said. And Jimmy Carter was the last president to really level with the American people about the reality of this. And those of you who are old enough remember well Carter's conversations, where he wore sweaters in the White House in the winter so that they didn't have to turn the heat up so high, you know, so they'd use less energy. And he said, you know, we're hitting the point, and this was back in the 80s, in the late 70s, we're hitting the point where we're importing, you know, nearly a third of our oil. Now it's half. And of that third of our oil that we're importing, you know, we're getting about a third of it, and now half of our imported oil, from the Middle East. And, you know, what we saw in 1974, because, see, back in the late 70s, this was still in everybody's memory. You know, what happened in 70, 72, 70, either 72 or 73, the Arab oil embargo. You know, there was that war with Israel and the Arab, and we took Israel's side, and the Arab countries said, okay, you're going to do that? No more oil. And boom, Nixon was president. We had, if your license plate ended with an odd number, you could only buy on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, and Saturday. And if your license plate ended with an even number, it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And it was a mess. We were living in Detroit at the time, Louise and I, when that happened. And the supermarkets got wiped out because the truckers went on strike because the gas prices were going up because they couldn't get gas. And it was people got killed in line. You know, fights would break out. People would shoot each other. So Carter said, we need to develop alternative sources of energy rather than increasing our dependence upon the Middle East. And if George Bush had just said that, we need to, and doing this is going to create millions of jobs. We will become the leaders in a new technology for the world. But no, instead it was, if we're going to maintain the non-negotiable, to quote his father, lifestyle of the American people, the right to drive SUVs, regardless of gas mileage, then we've got to have a footprint in the Middle East. We've got to stabilize the region because that's where our oil comes from. What a tragedy. What a tragedy. What a failure of leadership. Hopefully we can change that. November 2nd, 2004.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And get out there and vote!
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, nearly 300 members of the American Federation of Government Employees Union marched outside the headquarters of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. They were protesting recent rulings by the authority's Federal Service Impasse Panel, a group that arbitrates union grievances. AFGE's president, John Gage, called the seven-member panel anti-union, anti-employee, and anti-collective bargaining. Gage also accused the group of imposing radical right-wing philosophies in the federal workplace. The protest was also a call for President Bush, who appointed the original seven members, to appoint a fair and independent board.
For the first time since 1999, more than 150 unions in Peru participated in a 24-hour general strike on Wednesday. They were striking against Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo. Elected with a majority of popular support, Toledo's approval rating has dipped to only 7%. More than 90,000 police officers were called out to use tear gas on the thousands of protesters blocking the streets with burning tires and debris. Demonstrators say they're angry with Toledo's free market policies and with Peru's rampant poverty. Over half of the country's population lives on less than $1.25 a day.
One of the biggest accounting firms in the country is being sued under claims that a HIV-positive man was discriminated against by management. James Keith Lackey, who was employed at the Dallas branch of KPMG, said that after he had to reveal to his supervisor, Paula Rogers, that he was battling HIV, she ordered him to wear gloves at his workstation. Another supervisor in the same department said that Rogers told others at the firm that Lackey had the virus, a violation of the Texas Health and Safety Code. According to Lackey, the complaints he made to Human Resources fell on deaf ears, and at one point he was told he should just wear the gloves to make Rogers happy. Soon he found himself transferred to the mailroom. He was terminated from KPMG in March of this year.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to approve the implementation of the U.S.-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Ranchers stand to lose significantly as tariffs on sheep and livestock are phased out. The agreement also blocks the importation of less expensive prescription drugs from Australia. The Senate is expected to vote on the agreement by August. It will likely pass and be signed by President Bush.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS has reduced the workforce in some African countries by 20%. A recent report issued by the International Labor Organization estimates that 6,000 youths are infected daily. The report goes on to say that as the trend continues, it could have a devastating effect on labor in high-prevalence African countries, and also result in lower productivity and pose a great challenge to future economic growth.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
George W., bless his little heart, loves national parks. At least he tells us he does in various campaign ads and carefully staged photo ops that picture him in khaki and plaid walking around our parks. In fact, we now learn that George so loves national parks that he can't stand to hear any bad things said about them. So the Bushites have issued new upbeat talking points, instructing all park personnel not only to speak positively about park conditions, but also to praise George himself for being so good for our parks. They find it necessary to try dictating what's said about the parks because, well, the parks are deteriorating badly. This is especially embarrassing to George because he had campaigned in 2000 on a solemn pledge to eliminate the $4 billion backlog in needed repairs to fix unsafe trails, clogged toilets, closed facilities, etc. But he didn't keep his promise. In fact, he has cut park budgets. The repair backlog now stands at $5 billion and growing. To try covering up the obvious, the Bushites issued an internal memo to park superintendents, instructing them not to use the term budget cuts when telling visitors why things are such a mess, but instead to say service level adjustments. Also, they were told to implement their budget cuts in areas that won't cause public or political controversy. And if visitors ask about the bad conditions, superintendents were told to say, "This administration is very committed to preserving the resources of the national parks." What happens if a park official balks at the new Bush speak? Asked Teresa Chambers, head of the U.S. Park Police. When she told reporters that she didn't have the funds to do an adequate job, she was forced to go on administrative leave and ordered not to talk to reporters. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight Bush's politicalization of our parks, call the National Parks Conservation Association, 1-800-628-7275.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Tom Hartman here back with you.
NBC News first reported about an outburst on the floor of the House, House of Representatives. We discussed this briefly with Congressman Bernie Sanders in the first hour of the program. Congresswoman Corrine Brown, Democrat from Jacksonville, Florida. You know, they were a little upset back when, in 2000, the election. And one of the things, by the way, and I don't have that story right here in front of me. It was in my stuff as I was going through it last night. I'll have to do it next week in detail. But the bottom line is that it has been repeated several times just in the last week on several different right-wing talk shows by the hosts that no matter how the vote was counted in Florida, George Bush won. When, in fact, the recount that was done by all those newspapers, you know, that combine of newspapers, showed that if it was either four or five counties that Al Gore had originally requested be recounted, if that recount was done the way that Al Gore had originally asked for it to be done, because he thought he knew where the fraud had happened, then Al Gore would have lost, and George Bush would have won by 537 votes or whatever it was. But if every vote in the state was recounted, which is what the newspapers did, that's why it took them almost a year to do it. Remember they came out with this report in mid-September of 2001? Came out about a week and a half, 2 weeks after 9/11. If every vote in the entire state was counted, Al Gore got more votes than George Bush. There were four different counting scenarios, in fact. That would be one of them, another being, you know, certain these counties, those counties, whatever. The different contested scenarios. Four different scenarios in which Gore won, including, you know, the motherlode one, which is if you count every vote. And that was the chant, by the way, when Bush sued Al Gore in the Supreme Court. It was Bush v. Gore. Bush, the guy who doesn't think the trial lawyers are a good idea, hired some trial lawyers and sued Al Gore to stop the vote count from proceeding in the state of Florida because they had shifted their strategy from let's just count a few of these counties to let's recount the whole state. Let's know what really happened. And Gore would have won had that count done. And it was in the New York Times. It was in the newspaper. It was reported widely. It was 16 paragraphs down. And after, you know, a year later, 2002, early 2003, one of the editors of the New York Times was interviewed for, as I recall, it was the Columbia Journalism Review, and they said, why did you bury the story? You know, why did the headline say something like, you know, Bush would have won under Gore's recount rules, something to that effect? Basically, in other words, if the recount was done the way that Gore had asked for it to be done, Bush actually would have won. And that's the number that everybody uses now. And they said, why didn't you state that Gore actually got the majority of votes if you did a statewide recount, which is what the law called for and is what Gore was calling for. It's what, you know, the five justices on the Supreme Court who were all appointed on the watch of George Herbert Walker Bush put a stop to. And that newspaper editor said something to the effect of, well, you know, 9/11 had just happened. And we were concerned that if we reported that George Bush actually didn't win Florida, that it would harm the legitimacy of his presidency, and at a time of national crisis, that wouldn't have been a good thing. So we led with Bush would have won by Gore's initial request for the recount rather than Gore would have won if the whole state was recounted. And as I said, Limbaugh, Hannity, several other of these right-wing hosts, just in the last week or two, have said, no matter how you counted it, Bush won. And that's simply not true. It's simply not true. So anyhow, Corrine Brown, a Democrat from Jacksonville, Florida, gets on the House of the Floor of Representatives and just goes ballistic about this last night. I want to get into this in just in some more detail on this. First, though, let's go to the phones. 1-866, if you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Sarah in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Sarah, what's up?
Oh, Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Yes. I just wanted to call about Mike Ditka. I don't know if you have covered that yet today or not.
No, I haven't.
You know, he was being groomed by the Republicans to run for senator.
Yeah.
And then he withdrew. And I was watching the news or listening to it all day yesterday on CNN because of my work. I can do that. And I noticed that when the story first broke that he was rejecting the nomination, they reported it totally differently from later on when the news started, you know, recycling.
Mm-hmm.
And when he rejected it, they played him speaking. He gave a little speech, and he said, you know, I come from a long line of Democrats. My father was a Democrat. My grandfather was a Democrat. They were both Union Democrats, strong Union Democrats. And I don't know what happened to me. I became a Republican, but I've changed now, and I'm a different person, and I'm just not going to accept this position. And then,
oh,
you know,
no.
That was it. Now, when they replayed that
now, Sarah,
news,
hang on. Sarah, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what he said.
That's incredible.
Now,
I missed that altogether.
When they replayed the news a few minutes or half an hour later, they had talking heads on there, and they said, Mike Ditka has pulled out. I guess he's a weenie. And that was all they said.
Yeah.
And then in the future broadcasts, subsequent broadcasts, there was no mention of this speech. Could that have been a joke?
Well, what has happened, Sarah, and this is probably what you're describing is one symptom of it. What has happened is that the Reich Wing in the United States in the last, particularly in the last 6, 8, 10 years, has been so well funded by a few billionaires, basically, you know, Joe Coors of the Castle Rock Foundation and others, Richard Mellon Scaife and whatnot, and they fund these right wing think tanks and media watchdog groups in quotes, and any time the media says anything that might reflect poorly on conservatives or Republicans, they get hammered. And so the result has been that over the last couple of years, and we certainly saw this, we've certainly seen this in the last 2 or 3 years, the bending over backwards, trying to prove how objective they are, the liberals of the media end up only telling the conservative side of the story and not generally, very often anyway, telling the whole story. I mean, it's they're afraid they're going to get jumped on.
Well, this isn't a particularly good example of this. And, you know, they had him all speaking in his own words on a tape saying,
yeah,
my father was a Democrat, my grandfather was a Democrat, I don't know what happened to me, but I'm a different person now.
Hmm.
And then nothing about that later. And so I just thought I'd pass that on.
Yeah, that's an interesting
one. I thought
one.
It was interesting.
Yeah. Thank you, Sarah.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for calling. 15 minutes past the hour. Fascinating. The whole thing with Mike Ditka was, you know, here's my take on that. The Republican National Convention, which is going to be coming up in the next month or so, month and a half, the end of August, right before 9/11, right there in New York City, the Republican National Convention is going to feature speakers like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is in favor of gay marriage and in favor, who doesn't by and large buy into the right wing agenda, and you know, McCain and a few others who just, like, you know, don't go along with Bush on all kinds of things. They're not. I guarantee you, they are not going to feature at the Republican National Convention the real hardcore right wingers, the ones who are really running the Republican Party. You're not, and if they do put any of those people up, you know, like Tom DeLay, they're going to have very carefully scripted speeches, because the Republican National Convention is when they're going to try to convince America that they actually represent the majority of Americans, when in fact the Republican Party has been taken over by a small right-wing fringe that probably represent the worldview of 10 to 15, maybe at the most 20% of Americans. And the way they've been able to do it is by basically lying to us. I'm a conservative. I mean, a compassionate conservative. Yeah. And so, anyway, this is what we're seeing. And Mike Ditka was just another example. Get a star. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, they didn't care what his politics were. Oh, we're in favor of family values. Oh, he groped some women. Doesn't matter. He's a Republican. Right? But he's a star. And Ditka was a star. Ditka was also a walking time bomb. The guy, you know, he's got a temper. It's just, poof. And it would have been great if he had been nominated, because he would have blown up at somebody and everybody would have, but, you know, he would have self-destructed. I think he figured that out before the Republicans did. They were willing to hang him out to dry just to have somebody there. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Sean in Indianapolis is on the line. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Tom. There's a couple of things. First of all, I wanted to ask you, the letter that you read to George Bush about the Leviticus and the Bible thing yesterday.
Yeah.
That was really great. Where did you get it? Where can I get a copy?
Somebody sent it to me in email. That thing has been floating around for a year or so on the internet, and I'll bet that if you went into Google and you typed, it actually, in its first incarnation, it wasn't a letter to George Bush. It was a letter to one of the right-wing talk show hosts. So I wouldn't put George W. Bush in. I'd put in something like Leviticus, homosexuality, and slaves, you know, a couple of the words, you know, like, you know, where it says, you know, I can sell my daughter into slavery. And I'll bet you'll find it without any problem. If not, you know, drop me a note or tom@tomhartman.com, or go, you know, post something on our message board, and I'll track it down. Or if one of the folks in our chat room will track it down, and we'll post on the message board at tomhartman.com.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
That was just great.
And, yeah, it was a scream, wasn't it?
I can use that on a few people, and they'll love it too.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to let you know, this is not made the mainstream media at all, but there's a sports book on the internet called Casablanca Sports Book, and in their URL, they've got CBS in their URL, in their web address.
Mm-hmm.
They've had that web address for 7 years, and nobody said anything about it. And now CBS is hassling this little tiny sports book and trying to sue them to get CBS out of their URL.
Yeah.
Apparently, CBS has got a monopoly on everything CBS.
Well, it's not just CBS. All the very large corporations have. I mean, they've got enough power to hire lawyers and just drive you into the ground. You know, and that's
what they're going to be doing to these guys.
Yeah.
And the ironic thing is that the guys that run this sports book really are good. They give a lot of money to the Costa Rica kids.
Yeah,
and it's
a shame.
General.
Sean, we got a boogie here, but thanks for the call and thanks for the tip. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America.
Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
You're listening to The Tom Hartman Program.
I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chuck in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey there. I just was looking at CNN, and I noticed that Martha Stewart got a grand total of 5 months.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Well, that's a good question. I think it's ironic that she was charged with insider trading. You know, they really went after her hard for something that was relatively minor, and that what has surprised me is that there has been no discussion of the Securities and Exchange Commission investigation into George W. Bush's insider trading scandal, which was...
You just hit it right on the head. That was actually my next point.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, he made $800,000 on an insider trading deal. The SEC started to investigate it. His father stepped in, and they dropped it like a hot potato. He was never clear to that. He was on the audit committee of Harkin Energy. He sold his stock. You know, a few weeks later, the stock fell off the edge of the earth. He knew that this was coming. It was obviously an inside deal. And he made so much more money than Martha Stewart did. And not only that, I mean, you know, George W., I mean, that's one. But look at all the guys at Enron. You know, we're talking about billions of dollars. Enron was the largest corporation in America when it went down. Or certainly one of them. I think they were number one
number
in market.
Number seven.
Okay, thank you. Number seven in market capitalization. Maybe they're going to go after Ken Lay now, but it's like they're.
What's going on? I mean,
well, okay. Here's what's going on. She's a woman. She's a Democrat. and an outspoken Democrat, and she and she's high profile. And
that's
so,
right.
You know, yeah, let's go after her. Don't go after those rich white guy Republicans. Don't do that. You know. So that's my take on it. And I think if she got 5 months, you know, ultimately what she was convicted of was a lying about a cover-up, not about the actual crime itself. The charges on the crime itself got dropped. And they weren't dropped until, like, the day that the jury decided to go in and deliberate. And so that's going to be the basis for an appeal. They've got three different bases for appeals, you know, without getting into the details of it all. And I'm assuming that they filed an automatic appeal and that she hasn't gone to jail, right?
As far as we know, she actually did walk, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. I would think, frankly, if she got a 5-month sentence, that probably in her own best interest, the best thing for her to do would be to go do the 5 months, and or you know, it'd probably end up being less than that. And
I think it's just mind bending, Tom. I mean, it's just see this just egregious. I mean, no one lost any money. No investors lost any money. No 401ks were wiped out as a result of this. And she does 5 months, and these other characters walk.
Oh yeah, and there's hundreds of them. But the other characters are all well connected to the Republican Party and to the to the Democratic Party too as well. But principally the people in power right now, the people who are making these decisions. And I don't mean this like some kind of conspiracy theory thing, but you know, but these are the facts. I mean, you know, it's right there. It's
I guess so. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Chuck. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. I just want to play. Very quickly here, here's Corrine Brown on the floor of the House of Representatives.
I come from Florida, where you and others participated in what I call the United States coup d'etat.
She's talking to Tom DeLay.
We need to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Over and over again, after the election, when you stole the election, you came back here and said, get over it. No, we're not going to get over it. And we want verification from the world.
Now, what she was asking for is the UN to send observers into Florida in November of 2004. Tom DeLay and the Republican leadership not only declared her out of order and struck her comments from the record. You will not find any trace of what she just said on the record of Congress. But they also then proposed legislation making it illegal for anybody to observe the elections in Florida. What's going on? 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, nearly 300 members of the American Federation of Government Employees Union marched outside the headquarters of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. They were protesting recent rulings by the authority's Federal Service Impasse Panel, a group that arbitrates union grievances. AFGE's president, John Gage, called the seven-member panel anti-union, anti-employee, and anti-collective bargaining. Gage also accused the group of imposing radical right-wing philosophies in the federal workplace. The protest was also a call for President Bush, who appointed the original seven members, to appoint a fair and independent board.
For the first time since 1999, more than 150 unions in Peru participated in a 24-hour general strike on Wednesday. They were striking against Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo. Elected with a majority of popular support, Toledo's approval rating has dipped to only 7%. More than 90,000 police officers were called out to use tear gas on the thousands of protesters blocking the streets with burning tires and debris. Demonstrators say they're angry with Toledo's free market policies and with Peruvian lives on less than $1.25 a day.
One of the biggest accounting firms in the country is being sued under claims that a HIV-positive man was discriminated against by management. James Keith Lackey, who was employed at the Dallas branch of KPMG, said that after he had to reveal to his supervisor, Paula Rogers, that he was battling HIV, she ordered him to wear gloves at his workstation. Another supervisor in the same department said that Rogers told others at the firm that Lackey had the virus, a violation of the Texas Health and Safety Code. According to Lackey, the complaints he made to Human Resources fell on deaf ears, and at one point he was told he should just wear the gloves to make Rogers happy. Soon he found himself transferred to the mailroom. He was terminated from KPMG in March of this year.
The U.S. House of Representatives voted on Wednesday to approve the implementation of the U.S.-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Ranchers stand to lose significantly as tariffs on sheep and livestock are phased out. The agreement also blocks the importation of less expensive prescription drugs from Australia. The Senate is expected to vote on the agreement by August. It will likely pass and be signed by President Bush.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. HIV and AIDS has reduced the workforce in some African countries by 20%. A recent report issued by the International Labor Organization estimates that 6,000 youths are infected daily. The report goes on to say that as the trend continues, it could have a devastating effect on labor in high-prevalence African countries, and also result in lower productivity and pose a great challenge to future economic growth.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Isn't Willie an amazing voice?
My love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again.
I so would like to just play that whole. Anyway, welcome back. Speaking of the little guy and gal, speaking of the interests of average people, you know, we do have, in the United States, we do have tariffs. We actually do have these taxes in place with regard to some nations to protect domestic industries. The problem is that we've dropped them with so many countries so that anything can be brought into the United States. Particularly if Walmart wants to bring it into the United States from China, for example, without having to pay tariffs. Tariffs are taxes that you pay on something being imported. You know, traditionally the way it was this all started in the 17... Well, it didn't start then. I mean, tariffs in Europe go back to the 10th century. But in the 1700s, in 1784, Tench Cox, who was an American small businessman, got passed through the... This was when we were still operating under the Articles of Confederation. Got passed the first tariff for the protection of domestic American industries. And basically what he did was they put an import tax on pretty much just about everything. I mean, most of the law was the things that were the exceptions to the tariff. So if you wanted to bring in anything that could be made here, you had to pay 25-50% tax on that. And why did they do that? Well, because they wanted people to make them here. Real simple. And it's been that way for a long, long time. I mean, this is one of the rules of the international trade game that allowed the United States and the European countries and Australia as well, and Japan, you know, what is referred to as the first world, the fully developed countries, allowed them to have standards of living where the average wage in the country was $25,000 to $35,000 a year. Norway has the highest standard of living in the world with an average income of $33,600 a year. The United States, I believe, is around 29 something, or maybe it's 30,000. We're number 7 according to the United Nations, which is still pretty good. And the way that we were able to hang on to that high standard of living was by saying, you know, our economy within our country is going to be its own economy. That is, we are going to have a domestic economy. And individual states had state economies, and local communities had local economies. And so a local community would say, you know, we really don't want a big out-of-state corporation coming in here and selling stuff in our community, because we know that what will happen if a you know, the equivalent of a Walmart, and this goes back way back. I mean, the first lawsuit about this was J.C. Penney versus the state of Florida, 1936, before the United States Supreme Court. And in the state of Florida, and in many communities in the state of Florida, they had laws that said if you're an out-of-state corporation and you come into Florida and you do business in Florida, but it causes all the money to leave Florida, then you're going to have to pay a tax, a higher tax than a company based in Florida would pay if it was doing the exact same thing. Why? Because they want to keep their local economy strong. And we were doing the same thing as a country. See, people are slowly starting to figure this out. If you buy something at Walmart, say you spend a dollar at Walmart, at the end of the day they push a button, and that dollar goes to Bentonville, Arkansas, and maybe 15, 20 cents of it, maybe 5 or 10 cents of it, depends on whose studies you're looking at, will come back to the community in the form of rents or land taxes, salaries to the employees of the local Walmart. But the majority of it stays in Arkansas. That's why five Walton heirs in aggregate are worth more than Bill Gates. When Sam Walton died, he was the richest man in the world. His kids, if you accumulate them, his widow and his kids, are the richest in the world. Richer than Bill Gates. And what happens is that you know, that 17 cents, I mean, that doesn't do a lot for the community. Whereas if you buy something at the local store, then that local business person puts that money in the local bank, and the local bank then can loan out money against their deposits. And so somebody wants to start a business, so they loan them that money, you know, some of that money, and that dollar spent in a local business becomes $1.17 on average within 12 months in a local community. And so, you know, there's this thing about local economy. Well, we understood about having a national local economy, as it were. And we did right up through the, you know, Reagan started dismantling this aggressively in the 1980s, because while it helped American workers and it helped local American economies, it did not help large multinational corporations. It diminished their profits. Very simple. You know, Phil Knight couldn't do his Nike gig with tariffs in place. So we said, hey, you know, you want to make shoes in the United States or you want to make them in China? It doesn't matter to us. But here, if there's a dollar's worth of labor in a shoe, and you want to make that same shoe in China where that labor only costs 10 cents, you can do that, no problem. But when you import it, you're going to have to pay 90 cents a shoe in taxes, in tariffs. So the cost of labor will be identical. And that's how so, you know, everybody said, well, okay, if that's the case, then we'll just make them here. And that's why we had a shoe industry in the United States until Reagan became president. That's why we manufactured shirts in the United States until Reagan became president. That's why we made blue jeans in the United States. That's why, you know, and all of this stuff is now gone. And I'm not just blaming this on Reagan. I mean, it was Reagan and then Bush Sr., and then Bill Clinton actually did the worst of it all, pushing through NAFTA and GATT, leading to the creation of the World Trade Organization, just kicking the doors open. And now George W. of course is aggressively still going down this road. What's good for the multinationals is our policy. But that's what we're gonna. So I say all this by way of setup. A piece of legislation came before the House of Representatives yesterday. House Resolution 4759, H.R. 4759. And it's being promoted by the Republicans, and first of all, here's why. This is a bill that will drop, here's what. It's going to reduce the U.S. tariffs, that is the import taxes, on dairy, wheat, beef, and other agricultural products from Australia. So we're going to allow the Australian farmers to directly compete with American farmers. People say, what's wrong with competition? Well, you know, sometimes you don't want certain types of competition. But what's interesting about this are two provisions. And first of all, where did this come from? Why is it that we're now dropping our tariffs with Australia? Well, the reason why is because this was the deal that George Bush originally cut to get the Australians into the coalition of the billing. You remember the coalition of the billing, the various nations that we have paid off in various ways to participate with us in the Iraq war. And, you know, if you'll send 40 people, Albania, we'll help you. If you'll send 60 people, Moldova, well, Australia sent, well, they've got 800 now soldiers in the Middle East, about 500 of them in Iraq. And in exchange for that, what Bush told them was, we'll drop our tariffs on imported Australian agricultural products. And Australia was like, oh, cool, you know, our farmers will be able to make a lot more money if you're going to open up the market in America to us as if we were Americans. Because the Australian dollar is quite low relative to the American dollar. They can make it cheaper there relative to our cost here. And they got all excited, and in fact, one of the things they were most excited about was that they could export sugar to the United States, because they've got a substantial sugarcane industry in Australia. Well, right after the Gulf War, when this bill came to, you know, came time to figure this thing out, the sugar industry in the United States, which is substantial and contributes lots of money, particularly to the Republicans, said no. Not going to happen. So they've excluded sugar from this thing. Well, this has now set off a firestorm in Australia. And, you know, Howard has taken all kinds of heat for it. And the Australians, you know, well, bang, you sold us out. And the Australians are, you know, everybody in Australia knows about this, about the sugar. You know, they got screwed over sugar. Right? It's just, they're very unhappy about it. So there's that. But the other thing that I find most interesting about this House Resolution 4759, this to reduce U.S. tariffs on Australian beef, dairy, wheat, and other agricultural products, is that the drug industry got into the act. The drug industry looked at this thing and they said, oh, this is interesting. We're gonna increase trade with another country. We don't want that to happen, at least not at a retail level. It's okay if, you know, big corporations want to do business with each other, but not the people. No, not the people. And so they have written a proviso, an exception into this Australian free trade agreement, as it were, this reduction on tariffs, that says that it's illegal. It's banned for Americans to buy pharmaceuticals from Australia. Now, Australia doesn't make very many pharmaceuticals, so in Australia there's not a whole lot of people who care about this. The problem, though, is that American pharmaceuticals are... See, Australia has a national health care system. And unlike with Medicare, where you know, the Bushies got together and said, okay, let's, you know, with the drug industry. I mean, it's just amazing. The drug industry, they drop a few million bucks on politicians and they make billions in profit. Our politicians are so cheap. It's just, it's sad, really, when you think about it. And so, anyway, the drug industry went to the Republicans and said, and you know, the reality is they've done it with the Democrats in the past as well. I'll be nonpartisan in my politician bashing here. They went to the Republicans and they said, make it illegal for... We know that the Pentagon negotiates the drug prices with us, and we have to sell them drugs cheaply. I mean, you know, it's. I mean, there's a difference in a price of a bottle of penicillin pills if you're buying 100 versus if you're buying 100 million. So, you know, the Pentagon says, hey, we're going to buy 100 million of them. You better give us a better price. And if you don't, we'll buy them from Germany or France or England or Australia or whatever. So they negotiate their prices. But they said, we don't like this. It's not very profitable. I mean, you know, the drug industry, there's a reason why the pharmaceutical industry is the single most profitable industry in the United States. And it's because they've got politicians in their pocket. and Mr. Frist on their side. So they came along and they said, okay, let's write into this Australia U.S.-Australia Free Trade Agreement a ban on the re-importation. That is, an American drug gets manufactured here, or a drug gets manufactured here by an American company. It gets sold to Australia, sold to a pharmacy in Australia. They got private pharmacies there. They're not owned by the government. Sort of a single-payer kind of a system. And the pharmacy then can mail order it back to you or me. And it'll cost a fraction of what it costs if you buy it at your local pharmacy. And so they wrote it in, let's ban this. Let's make this illegal. So, you know, the little guy. And you know, an appropriate, I think, a reasonable segue from that is this, what's happening with the economy right now? Don't you find it fascinating that the not just the conservatives, but even the media try to suggest that the economy, in quotes, right, the economy, that the economy is how well very wealthy people are doing and big corporations are doing. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, growing up in Michigan in the 50s and 60s, there were two newspapers coming out of Detroit, the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News, and one of them was the newspaper of big business, and the other was the newspaper of organized labor. I mean, they weren't owned by either, but that was their political, and one was the Democratic, one was the Republican, or the Republican and Democratic, to put it in proper order. And the big business was the Republican one, and the labor one was the Democratic newspaper. And you knew where they stood. You know, they spun their news, as it were, and everybody understood that. It's been that way in America for 200 years. It's only really in the last 20, 30 years that the media has gotten bought up by such a small number of corporations that they have started to try to pretend that they're lacking in bias. And I think it was healthier before when they just said, hey, this is our bias. Take it or leave it. And so anyhow, now we've got, you know, and the labor paper always had a labor section in it. What's happening? What's the average wage right now? What's happening? You know, keep in mind, when Ronald Reagan became president, 25% of Americans worked in unionized jobs, which meant that about 50% of Americans were getting the benefits of a union shop. Now it's 8%. And you wonder why one person can't raise a family anymore. Well, here are the latest statistics. The Labor Department said the number of Americans receiving state benefits rose by 112,000 unemployment benefits, 112,000 people to 2.97 million in the week ended July 3rd, a six-week high. Nearly one out of four of the unemployed have been unemployed for more than 6 months. So long-term unemployment up. Retail sales take the biggest dive in 16 months. They just dropped 1.1% in June. Consumer spending is down. Oil prices are up. You're not hearing a lot about this. The Energy Department says gas prices are going to continue going up. Where are we going with the economy? 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A predatory fish from Asia appears to be loose in the river that runs through Washington, D.C. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. 2 years ago, an Asian fish, the northern snakehead, appeared in a small pond in Maryland and got a lot of attention as a vicious frankenfish. Wildlife experts were concerned that these fish might start showing up in other places, and their fears were justified. At least six northern snakeheads have been discovered this year in the Potomac River, which runs right through Washington, D.C. Walter Courtenay is a fishery biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. He specializes in the study of invasive fish, and he says people have good reason to be concerned about the northern snakehead. It's a tough predator and could eat a lot of native fish. It also tolerates a wide range of temperatures and could survive almost anywhere in the United States. The fish that were discovered 2 years ago were deliberately dumped into a pond in Crofton, Maryland. The pond was completely enclosed, so it could be poisoned and the snakeheads could be eliminated. Courtenay says the situation today in the Potomac River is much different.
It's in a place where it cannot be eradicated. This is totally unlike the confined pond there in Crofton, which was 4.5 acres, which could be poisoned, which is what they did. There's no way you can poison the Potomac River, and there's no way you can drain it. So they're here to stay. That is if they're reproducing. We don't know that yet.
Courtenay says the impact of the northern snakeheads depends on their ability to reproduce.
I mean, if snakeheads become present in large numbers, they could cause severe damage to many of our native fish species. For example, within the Potomac, it could be largemouth bass and perch and so forth.
The northern snakehead is often used in Asian cooking, but it's now illegal to import live snakeheads into the United States. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 4.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. Helen in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Helen, are you listening to us on WRVC in Huntington, West Virginia?
Yes, for 1 hour. We wish we had more time of you.
Well, you know, what can I say? We're grateful to have an hour on WRVC, the Tri-State's home for news, sports, and talk. It's a great station, and it's wonderful that they're carrying our show.
I'm grateful for the hour, but I'd like to hear the other two and your comments. But
yeah.
We appreciate what you have to say, and we agree with you. I like what you said about Martha Stewart today, because I, too, have been informed about George Bush's insider trading, and no one did anything about that because his father was president.
Right. Well, he was vice president, actually, at the time, I think. But, yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, we plan on buying your book. And there was a Republican senator, Lincoln Chafee, is that
mm-hmm.
his name?
Yeah.
He's the only one, they said, the other day, that didn't vote for the resolution to go to war. And that he had made trips to the CIA several times and found nothing that would cause him to expel his vote.
Yeah.
And what I was going to say is he made the comment, I hope a lot of people heard it, that whether there was a vote or not, they were determined to go to war.
Yeah,
he
well,
said that.
You know, I mean, according to Paul O'Neill, who is a conservative Republican to this day,
mm-hmm.
Paul O'Neill, you know, the guy who said that we need to, when he was Secretary of the Treasury, on the record, I actually interviewed his office, this is in one of my books, he said that we need to do away with Social Security, we need to do away with Medicaid, that's socialism, there's no place for it in the American body politic. And, you know, he, as a cabinet officer in the Bush administration, he said that, and he said it on the record, it was reprinted in you know, from the Wall Street Journal to the Economist in London. And this guy...
I don't know why people close their eyes to this and their ears.
Oh, yeah, but
because
this...
Because the truth is the truth.
But Paul O'Neill...
If someone works for you like Paul O'Neill did, he was with an aluminum company, if I recall.
Yeah, Alcoa, he was the chairman, or the CEO. But he also said that the Bush administration had decided that they were going to go to war against Saddam Hussein before they even took office. And before they even took office, as George Bush walked in the door, he knew he was going to do this.
Let
so.
Me say one fast thing, Tom.
Okay, Helen.
Okay, I was just going to say that here's going to be the Republican convention and the Democrat convention. And here a while back, Bush made the comment, you know, like, there's Texas.
Helen, I'm sorry, we've run out of time.
Why isn't he having his convention? Why is he having it in America?
There you go. Yeah, they should offshore it. Helen, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks to all the folks who helped make our show work this week. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to the folks in our chat room. We'll see you next Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that